Husbands and wives have a solemn responsibility to love and care for each other and for their children. Children are an heritage of the Lord. Parents have a sacred duty to rear their children in love and righteousness.
We welcome you to Gospel Solutions for Families on the Mormon Channel, brought to you by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I'm Matthew O. Richardson, Second Counselor in the General Sunday School Presidency, and today we will be talking about family finances. I'm joined by two guests, which I'm very thrilled to have today. First, we have Mark Ogletree. Welcome, Mark.
Thanks, Matt.
And also Craig Israelson. Welcome, Craig.
Thank you.
I'm going to have you just take a brief moment just to kind of give a little bit of background or information and let you introduce yourself so that you can hit all the good stuff, the good stuff. Mark, let's start with you.
All right. Teach at BYU. I've been there for a few years. I have 8 children, several grandchildren. Aside from teaching at BYU, I do have a small little marriage and family practice.
Speaking of children, don't you have a daughter coming home today from a mission?
I do. She comes home at 4 o'clock.
You know, that might have, I'm just thinking off the top of my head, that might have some implications with family finances, with her coming home.
It does.
That's great.
We'll be $400 richer every month, right?
There we go. We also have, as mentioned, Craig. Craig, if you'll just introduce yourself very quickly.
Sure. Craig Israelson, my wife Tammy, and I live in Springville, Utah. We have 7 children and 2 grandchildren, little grandsons. I teach at Utah Valley University after opportunities to teach at University of Missouri and BYU, and just really delighted to be here today.
I'm so glad both of you are here today. As a matter of fact, I was mentioning to Craig earlier, the first interaction I had with you was at BYU, and I was on a university committee to review courses, and you were teaching a course called Family Finances. Boy, it was a fabulous course, and I became a convert. As a matter of fact, I went and told all my children, this is a course that every single one of you need to take before you leave the university. And so how's that for an endorsement?
Yeah, I appreciate that. It's a wonderful course.
Well, I was impressed not only by the material, but also the simplicity of the approach and then the way that you handled it. I just thought it was so practical, but yet the principles that were presented were so rich and important. And I thought when we're talking about family experiences and how we can improve family life, both in marriage and our families on an everyday experience, you cannot escape finances. You cannot escape the fact that we're living in a world we need to make our ends meet and do the very best we can so that we can be about the entire family scope. And it's interesting how those threads of finance come in. So in your experiences, both from a practical and a principal side, what comes to mind when we talk about how finances influences and affects marriage relationships?
Relationships swirl around all that we do each day. And one of the relentless parts of life is financial stewardship. And so, you know, whether we go to our in-laws or our parents on Thanksgiving, that's kind of a once-a-year issue. And it's important to work out that, right. So there's fairness and equity. But, you know, greasing that skid is not maybe quite as important as greasing the skids of financial stewardship, because that's an everyday thing, not a once-a-year thing. So we have to be very intentional as to our attention to finance, meaning that it has to be given some prime time in our thoughts, in our conversations, not that it becomes an obsession, but that we give our full energy to it, not you know, at 11:30 at night when both husband and wife are hammered, you know, and just so tired from the day, that's probably not the right time, you know, to go into that conversation.
I like this a lot. As a matter of fact, one of the things or a word that just stuck out for me, as you said, we must be intentional.
Yeah.
I think that this is an important word, and especially in families. I think sometimes people say, well, you just get married, you start having children, and just things, everything flows, you know, and it comes out the way it's supposed to. My experience has been is we must be intentional in relationships, must be intentional, even in our gospel worship, and then with finances. This is really an important aspect, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's relentless for a reason. Father, in his consideration of our growth, understands that when we deal with almost infinite wants and limited resources, we have to make some decisions. And so Adam and Eve were placed with some decisions they had to make. We are placed in a scenario where we have to make some decisions. And resource management, resource stewardship, is much like shaving or personal hygiene or anything else that's repetitive. You did a good job today. Now do it tomorrow.
Oh, I really like that. That's really good. I just think that if we're not careful, this is an area where procrastination will kill us. If we put the important things off now, it's going to really have dire consequences in the future. And I like this day-to-day experience. Mark, what comes to mind for you?
Well, I just wrote down that, financial peace and security definitely comes from discipline. And I like what Craig said about being intentional, because I do think that the financial part of our lives is something that we often, we're more reactive to it than proactive. And it definitely is something that impacts happiness and satisfaction in marriages, depending on, how the financial situation is going for families. It's something that can drain or suck the life out of a family or a couple if things aren't going so well. It's something that can give people, I think, a lot of peace and security when things are going well.
Now, you mentioned that you work in a family practice. Of course, you have your confidence, et cetera, but as a general principle, have you seen this in the practices with individuals you've been working with, that the impact of finances upon their relationships in both marriage and family?
Exactly. It's very significant. I actually went through notes this morning of families that I had seen in the last few years and noticed that there is a theme that almost everyone has some kind of financial issue that they're dealing with. Surprisingly, it wasn't as much of financial hardship as it was disagreements on how money is spent.
Oh, that's interesting.
So yes, I mean, there can be tons of issues here that just affect marriages for sure.
You know, it's interesting. Both of you bring two terms up that I'm thinking, oh, gee, this is not for me, I guess, because Mark, you said the word discipline. I'm thinking discipline. Oh, that's never very fun. That discipline thing, that's really rough. And then Craig, you brought up this concept about infinite wants with really a limited amount of resources. And I'm like, oh, wait a second. I thought that the answer to all financial problems, if I could just have more resources, then all of my problems will be solved. But as you mentioned, it's actually in God's plan, is that there are things that we're developing here, and this is part of the structure. But these two elements here is being able to get over the thought of, if I had enough money, all my problems would be solved, and being able to increase our discipline, or at least be disciplined in our approach in marriage and family, becomes critical, right?
Well, I had a conversation with my daughter some years ago, and she was just perplexed. And she said, I just wish I had enough money. And I thought, if we all had, let's take that to the extreme. So if we all had all the money we wanted, who could we help? There would be no way to help anybody.
Oh, I really like this.
And the fact that we have scarcity, what we define as scarcity, I should clarify, gives us an opportunity to choose. And so when there's something that's infinite, we would never have to prioritize. We would never have to wait. Interestingly, if we're placed in a situation of abundance, aka the Garden of Eden, we don't really have to make a lot of choices that illustrate a prioritizing. And if we don't learn how to prioritize, that's probably a virtue that we're missing. There's only so many ways to get the virtues that we want, and we don't get them without challenges and hardships. And that's how I've come to see financial stewardship, is that it's the schooling, it's the day-to-day opportunity to vote for patience, to vote for, I'll share this so that this person can have a little special treat, and I'll sacrifice something. That's how we become better. And so it's not as if financial stewardship is this big burden that has no meaning. Actually, it's part of the greatest meaning that we're here is to be. It's how we develop patience. How do we develop endurance? I think we endure things
day by day.
And so, viewed that in that way, these things aren't a burden. that we try to get out of our life, they really constitute our life, this life of daily refinement. And it really transforms how we see the purpose of financial stewardship. It's not a burden. It's the transforming blessing.
This is really good. As a matter of fact, I was thinking as you were speaking, sometimes when we talk about finances and say, okay, what can we do to help us be more self-reliant in finances, in families, et cetera. For me, it conjures up an image. If you're going to bring in a couple of experts, we're going to crunch some numbers and we're going to show you a couple of strategies. If you do A, B, C, it equals D. And look how this works, which is, there's no doubt about it. These things are important as far as that goes. But as you were talking, Craig, here we have words like prioritization, choice. I'll insert it in there, agency. You have things like sacrifice, becoming. And then one of the other ones that you said was patience. And I'm thinking, oh my goodness, these are hard things, at least hard initially, because in some ways they're not natural to some individuals. We want things not only now, we want them yesterday. I mean, I find that with my children. Can I have this? But I want it yesterday. Law of the harvest kind of goes out the window here of, wait, there's a time to plant and then you're going to have to nurture, and it's a consistent nurturance. And then comes the reciprocity or the blessing. And oh, by the way, if you're not planting, you're going to get hungry again, et cetera. So I love the approach here. Is there something here as that we see a larger image of these are personal characteristics. These are traits that not only have to deal with finances, but with relationships, the way that we treat one another, the way that we approach our life. It's kind of an ecology of the bigger whole. Is that a fair assumption?
I think so. You know, Matt, one of the things that I was thinking as you were talking, it occurs to me that all three of us are probably in our 50s. I bet all of us make
No, Mark, this is radio, so you didn't have to bring that up. We could have said that we're all in our...
I got my radio face on right now. But all of us probably make at least 4 to 5 times more than we were making out of college, right? And this is one of the things I talk to our students about at BYU. Yet, even though we're making so much more money, do we have any more? And most people would say, not really. Why? It's because we have now a bigger house. Our kids have cell phones. We just spend more money, the more money we make, right? And that's why it comes back to this idea of, I love what you're saying about discipline and choice and agency and patience, because really that's the difference maker right there. Also, the thought I had is that a lot of people say that money can't buy happiness. And I think it can in a certain way, because what money does is money gives us resources, and resources give us choices. We can decide where to live, you know, what kind of lifestyle to have based on the resources that we have. And so there is research that says that people who have the greatest amount of resources are the happiest people in our country.
That explains why I'm not very happy, I guess. My resources are limited. You
yeah,
know?
Me too.
Well, but it's so fascinating that you talk with people who may have been in school, may have gone to graduate school, and they lived in this little hovel, you know, on in a
under bridge,
yes, second east and fourth south, you know, where, you know, and a little basement apartment, mushrooms growing in the carpet, and you know, they think about and talk about these times as so in such glowing terms,
right?
And yet their resources were limited, at least by, you know, U.S. standards. And so what is it about that time of life that was so rich? Well, they were struggling, but they were struggling together for each right. other. And I definitely agree with Mark that resources bring an opportunity to make choices. And often those choices can be very warm choices in helping others. And where that can turn on itself is when a situation, the couple now has a lot more resources. If they turn against each other, it's now a struggle, but it's a struggle against each other.
Right.
And so it really comes down to how the nature of the struggle. In graduate school, they have very limited resources, but they're struggling together for each other. Later, more resources, they begin to struggle against each other. Either way, it's a struggle.
Right.
And the fascinating thing is we get to choose. We get to choose the version of struggle we want. Either it's for other people or it's against them. That always is a choice.
Maybe this is the foundational point of where we're looking at here is when we talk about, especially in marital relationships and family relationships, regardless of the amount of resources that one has, there will always be choice. There's always choice, right? I mean, I think that that sometimes people don't realize that. And they're saying, well, I only have X or 10, so therefore my choices are limited. Actually, you still have quite a bit of choice with 10 or 1,000 or 100,000. So it never removes the opportunity of choosing, so we must choose wisely. Another aspect I think is very important as a foundational principle here in family finances is something that you mentioned here, Craig, and Mark, you were mentioning this as well, is, and this comes from our church leadership, is constantly that this is a joint effort. This is a companion piece. And every article that you see that's coming forth from the church leadership is saying things like, we must work together. This is a responsibility of being together, or at least in the choice and decision process of how we are able to use that. Doesn't mean we have to help each other cross the T's perhaps or dot those I's, but it is a process of togetherness. Is that fair?
Totally fair.
Okay.
Couples work together. And this can unify marriages for sure.
Okay. Or it can take marriages apart if they don't work together or if they're choosing against each other for the greater whole, et cetera. And so I love this. Now,
there's a scary element here,
okay,
which is that money is a magnifier. And so money can magnify our weaknesses and it can magnify our virtues.
Oh, that's interesting. Yes.
And it just magnifies who we are at that moment. But the encouraging thing is, you know, you hear this expression, well, you just need to love me for who I am. And my thought is, for who you are, you mean like right now? Because I hope to get better. Do you hope to get better? I mean, we are who we are at that moment, but we're not stationary. We are trying to progress in our development. And so the very fact that money magnifies who we are, that's a scary and encouraging thought. But underneath that thought is that we can hold out as an intentional goal, I want to let money magnify me in more virtuous ways. I will seek to go toward that end. That's the intentionality I was trying to refer to.
Right.
That we know it's magnifying us. We get to choose, and it's by little simple decisions. The twin girls, and there's one favorite dress, and the one sister gets the date she really wanted. And so her sister says, you take the dress. You've got the date you really wanted. I mean, that's a very simple little thing, but that's magnifying a virtue by sharing a resource in that way.
So the resource isn't the end. It's just a means to the greater end, which is the virtue or virtuous living.
Yeah. I mean, we can learn a lot about ourselves by just reflecting on how we use resources. That tells us a lot about ourselves. And if we don't like what we're seeing, we get to vote for a different us.
This is really good, and it causes me to think of another element that's outlined in scriptures where it talks about telling, for me, it's a telltale about myself, is learning to distinguish between needs and wants. It's amazing what I would call a need, or actually I tease my children about this sometimes, is, Dad, I need this. And really, as we explore that, it's really more of wants. And I think that that's another element where it starts to tell us about ourselves, and we start to see how we see the world around us and others in our world. And this is there's no wonder for me that the Lord would say, one of the things I'd like you to learn as saints or individuals that are trying to be contributors into the larger whole is to distinguish between needs and wants and then act appropriately, choose appropriately. Now, I've had the opportunity over the last several years to travel throughout the world and meet individuals. And as we were talking, we've mentioned that some people have a lot of resources and some have very little. I've been able to see that firsthand, visit homes where the resources were so sparse, where I felt ashamed of the fact that I had so much in many ways. But yet it's been interesting is to find individuals who aren't limited by the amount of resources they have, as we've talked about, and they just seem to be so happy and they're living fulfilling lives. And I was in one area, a third world country, and this fellow we were with was so happy. He was just a joy to be around. And yet I knew for a fact he had very little as far as tangible objects, resources of means by the world standards. And I asked him once, why are you so happy? Why are you so happy? And his answer was so simple, but it was so profound. He said, I am living after the manner of happiness. I'm living after the manner of happiness. We talked a little bit about that. And he talked about core basic principles that he is choosing to do in his living that yields the greatest happiness. Now, that might be a long way to set the stage, but so here I have these experts with me today. And so using that as a foundation and with keeping finances in mind, if we were to look at core basic principles, simple basic principles that people can remember, we've talked about some really great things that my mind is just percolating right now, but we say, okay, tell me, what are some of the basic principles that lead to happiness when it comes to finances in family relationships and marital relationships? And I think that there could be some great traction in there and say, okay, these are simple. Here's something I can do this, or I can think about this. So here I go. I'm going to throw this back to you now. Is tell me some of the basic principles that just pop out that would bring the greatest traction to finding happiness when it deals with family finances.
Matt, I think there's a couple. The one that I think of is the satisfaction that comes and the peace that comes from being able to meet all the needs that your family has. Or in other words, to be able to pay all the bills, to have a full tank of gas. You know, there's even today, there's satisfaction there in knowing that those needs are met, and now there are other needs that you could meet outside of your own family. You can't lift other people, as presently said, unless you're standing on higher ground. And a great blessing, I think, is to be in a position to help others.
This is really good. Let me just interject very quickly. Is this, for me, comes back to the earlier discussion we're having, is to meet our needs, we need to distinguish between wants and needs. I see a lot of times in families are saying, I need to meet my needs. And you're like, I don't know if that's a need. And they spend their life going after something that really doesn't bring a greater fruit. Does that make sense? So I like this.
And when you talk of, I believe you're asking about practices, you know, maybe.
Well, but, yeah, both, but particularly practices, what can I do?
Yeah, I think when families have an emergency fund, there's a lot of peace that comes when you know that when the car breaks down, there's money set aside for that, you know? And we talk a lot about people who say, you need to pay yourself first. Well, that's true. I mean, if we wait until the end, there's often nothing to pay ourselves. And so we pay the Lord first, we pay ourselves next. And then we take care of our other obligations.
You know, we're short on time on this episode. And the good thing is we'll have a second round to be able to explore more basic principles. But let me just throw this out so we don't lose this thought. Mark, you're mentioning this, but what would I say to someone, or what would you say to someone that says, this is really a good point, but you know what? I only have 10 coming in. And for me, my expenses of basic needs are 10 or 11. So what are some things you could do when it's like, I can't even hardly be able to feed the children, let alone do an emergency fund. But I believe in the emergency fund, but what are some things that we could say to someone in that circumstance?
My mind goes to tithing, and tithing is certainly an operationally technical commandment in that we can count it, it's quantifiable, but that's not the essence of that commandment. The essence of that is that it is a day of tithing of my people, a day of sacrifice. And for some people, to pay tithing involves a sacrifice. Well, for other people, it may not involve, it still involves a sacrifice, but maybe not quite as dramatic,
right?
Because they don't have to give up certain things, whereas others do have to get – they can't pay tithing and do something else. I think that there's a holiness when we sacrifice and we willingly lay down something we wanted or in some cases needed. And oddly enough, and it won't make sense to the world, but offering a sacrifice on the altar, whatever that sacrifice is to live after the manner of happiness.
I like this. As a matter of fact, I was in a meeting once with some church leaders where they were talking about how do we finance some of the programs, chapels? How do we finance buildings? How do we, educational system? How do we do this in the church? These are expenditures of large capital items. Then the proposal was, as well, we're bright individuals. We have a lot of connections in the world of people with a lot of resources. We can fundraise and we can be able to do this. And one of the church leaders brought up this principle, says, the day we start to cut out the widow's mite, the finances of an institution or a program that is funded by sacrifices, the day we start to cut off some of the most treasured blessings of that institution, program, building, etc. I'd never really thought about that in that way, but I think what you're saying is that notion is there are greater blessings that come when sacrifice is involved, because it's really a principle of higher living or godly living.
Yes, I agree.
You know, Matt, on that, I thought of what Craig said, and I totally agree. You put the Lord first, you pay your tithing. But I also always have believed in the idea of you pray and then you go to work. And the meeting that I'm thinking of that I was in 20 years ago with religious educators was when someone tried to address the question that you asked, which was, okay, we need to save this much money. We need to save $11 or $12, but we're only making $10. And I remember the financial planner who was conducting the meeting said, then you know what? You better find a way to go bring in more money. And so the idea was, if you have to get a second job, if you have to pick up a newspaper route, if you have to deliver pizza, whatever you need to do, then you need to go do it. Sometimes we have to do things like that.
This is true. And then I remember being in a meeting once where a similar thing happened, and they gave another type of advice as well. Actually, I learned this at a BYU appropriations meeting. We were doing some budgeting. You might need to find a way to cut your expenses. So you either augment one side or you might have to sacrifice and cut down on the other, you know. And I thought, wow, these are basic principles. And why didn't I think of that? Sometimes I think if I just had more money, I have no problems.
Yeah, and the beautiful part of reducing expenses, if we reduce an expense by $1, that dollar, quote, saved is not taxed.
Oh, there you go.
If we earn an extra dollar, well, that dollar is taxed. And so Benjamin Franklin, you know, a penny saved is more than a penny. I'm paraphrasing, but a penny saved really is more than a penny earned, because the penny saved is fully there.
That's interesting.
There's no taxation on a saved penny.
Oh, you have all whetted my appetite to the point where I'm like going, well, I want to build upon that. I have more questions about that. Tell me more about this. And sadly, we are out of time for at least this time together. But fortunately, as mentioned, we have a little more time in another episode where we can flesh some of these principles out and also talk about other things that would help us, practical ways so that finances cannot... will not just be a burden, as some look at it, but a great blessing in the way that we manage and operate our relationships. So thank you for your comments, and I look forward to our discovery in our next episode. You have been listening to Gospel Solutions for Families on the Mormon Channel, brought to you by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.